So then they've got this disconnect within themselves and this internal conflict, which leads to depression, right? Yeah. So it's always like knowing who you are and what's important to you, and then living in, stepping into that. And it just sounds to me like you're really stepping into that, and you're stepping into that place where you want to lead with your heart, give back, and be true to you, your values and you.
I'm trying, so I wouldn't say I'm 100% there, but at least I know what I want to do, you know. So I'm doing, and I'm doing some other things as well, I'll get you.
Yeah.
So the other thing is now I'm also giving something back. So I'm about to join the board of Onside Youth Zones, which basically create youth clubs in underprivileged areas. And when I was younger, I used to go to youth clubs and play centres. I worked in play centres when I was a bit older, and I could see firsthand how important they were for society, because there's a lot of, particularly with single mums, and certainly underprivileged areas, they might be out of work doing nursing at all sorts of hours, and their kids then have a safe place to go. And when I was growing up, that was government funded with play centres and youth centres or after school clubs, but that doesn't exist nowadays. And they go on about why there's knife crime in the UK. Well, it's because the kids don't have anywhere to go, so they're out in the streets, and they just see, you know, gang members as their sort of role models, and as a result, that's how it happens. They go down that route. So we've been involved with helping create the Legacy Youth Zone in Croydon, and obviously we've got a business in Croydon, and that's in Fulton Heath, and that's been really fantastic to see. And I said to them, when I step down, I've got more time, so I'm looking to now, I've been asked to join the board, so I'm going to join that board and give something back in terms of a charity that I believe I can make a difference at.
I love that, and I think it's so important. It's so vital, because obviously being a single mum myself, and seeing how much single mums, I mean, it's probably the hardest role I've ever played in my life.
It's really hard.
Coming from an actor's perspective, because we play different roles in our lives all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a massive challenge. Mm. And then put in any financial strain on that.
Yeah.
And having, you know, I remember when I grew up, my parents, my dad was an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He lost his business.
Yes.
And both my parents didn't work.
Yeah.
So I had two parents that had a house more or less paid for.
Yeah.
So that you didn't fit into any category.
Yeah.
You wasn't in, you know, so you didn't fit into any category. There was a lot of immigrational shame still generations passed down, and I had nowhere to go, and I was an I could act. I got into the Brit school.
Yeah, well done.
My parents didn't let me go. They were like, you're not going.
Brit school in Croydon?
In Croydon.
Wow.
And I was very talented.
Yeah.
But there was nowhere for me to go. There's nowhere for me to go. And there was an element of bringing that, for me, I'm really passionate. And when I'm hearing you speak about this, it's like one of my life purposes, when I was even really young, was that I really wanted to open places in deprived areas that brought acting. Because if you're being bullied at home and you've got knife crime and all this type of stuff going on, you're bullied on the streets, and your parents are not going to want you to go to counselling or to do something with mental well-being, but they let you act.
Yeah.
And there's this thing with what I've studied, the coaching model I studied, which is the most credible, the coactive coaching. It comes from Meisner, which is an acting technique, and coaching.
Yeah.
So it's bringing the both together, because you're allowing emotions. Okay, anger is an emotion, it's normal.
Yeah.
But if children haven't got a safe place when they can express their anger, because anger is going to be big now with what's happening in the economy.
Yeah.
If there's not a safe place where you can go, let's just contain this, let's all shout and scream together, this is a normal emotion, right? Mm. Then how do we contain it? Then how, if there's not going to be places like this in society, then it's really difficult. So I can have a youth centre, but again, how do we do something different where we can bring the creativity, where we can use the emotions that are going to be rife in the communities and channel them in a positive way and bring more emotional awareness and connection.
Yeah.
And that can only happen with the youth and the next generation.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share with you one of my passions on that.
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing, because I think every community should have a place where they can go and act.
Mm.
And it should be a place where they can express themselves. Because I've even coached adults that are like, oh, I'd like to actually do it.
Yeah.
You know, just do what you love.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned this, because Onside do actually do that as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, so they've got their own, like, recording studios.
Yeah.
They've got their own radio stations, and they've got their own sort of drama and productions that they put on. So you should get involved.
I will. I would love to. It would be an absolute honour. I think that it's, you know, such an important thing, and what an amazing thing to do for society.
Yeah.
Because creativity is a future. Me and you know it, like AI's come in,
yeah.
things are happening. The creatives are people that we cannot put into robots.
I think kids having a safe place to go and grow as individuals is fundamental. So
it's so important.
I mean, I was really into sport, so I would be sort of playing cricket in the summer, like 6 days a week until my arm was sore from bowling or batting or whatever. And I remember, like, in the winter, I'd be playing rugby and football, you know.
And how privileged. I mean, like, my parents, as in both of them, never worked. I never had that opportunity. I never went to the theatre. And which has made me appreciate everything so much more. But at the same time, I'm like, everyone should have that opportunity, as in. And, you know, I love the fact that you're doing this.
Yeah.
So they can just walk through the door. And, from any background, there's just a safe place where they can go and act and express themselves.
I agree with you totally.
I love it.
Yeah. Watch this space.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'm really excited about that for you. I think that's really big.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And it's a charity that's making a difference. And, you know, and it's privately run. And it's got that entrepreneurial sort of edge about it. So it's run on a not-for-profit basis, but it's privately run. And, I'm looking forward to joining their board and giving
and to
a bit
grow
back.
It.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, especially with the government funding. I mean, I think, you know, it should be a standard thing if they could get any, you know. But it's just, this is a priority, right? The next generation. And, you know, we're looking at mental health and mental wellbeing, which I don't like saying, in essence, because no one's mental. And you don't want to drum that into people's subconscious minds, because we can find a condition in anyone if we look for it. Let's focus on positivity. Let's focus on what can we focus on. Okay, our emotions now, processing them, and visioning and meditation and hypnosis. Let's focus on these things and positivity, moving people forward.
It's funny that you say that, because actually I'm going to say something here that not a lot of people know. Well, actually, I've never publicly said, but I'm happy to share it now. And it's going back to what you said with the word mental there, okay, which is during COVID. I was just before COVID, I was like 1 week away from doing my big exit deal with Lloyds Bank, and then COVID came along, and it was a really hard time for me, because I imagine I'd worked on this this goal for 2 or 3 years, put all my energy into it, and it was within touching distance, and it just went. And so I found it, and then COVID came along, and obviously we had the restriction of staying at home, and I found it really difficult. You know, I found it mentally really difficult. And during that period, I went on what they call antidepressants. Okay. So I went on serotonin, which my understanding of serotonin, sertraline. It's a serotonin booster, okay? And I think the problem is, and I remember, like, I'm on antidepressant, because I think there's so much negativity about that word, antidepressant, almost as though you can't survive without that crutch. But if you have a headache, you take ibuprofen. If you've got a serotonin deficiency, in which a lot of the population have, so I used to particularly struggle with winters, okay, why would you not take a serotonin booster, you know? And that's what it is. And the problem is the stigmas that we attach to these words nowadays. And I'll say something to this. Do you know what? If it wasn't for going on sertraline, the serotonin booster, I won't use the word antidepressant, because I think it's just a real stigma to attach to it, and I don't think it's the right word, you know, I wouldn't be in such a good place that I am now, because it really made me not sweat the small bit. It really made me relaxed about, you know, don't worry, it's going to happen. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Rather than being anxious about it. And if one person could just hear what I just said about that and realize, then after that, I did the deal of my lifetime. I'm now in probably the best mental position I've ever been in, really positive about things.
Are you still taking them?
I no, but I I only stopped taking them just after COVID, but...
How did you get off them? Was it easy?
Well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't so much... I never really ever noticed being on them in the first place. So,
when I came off them
quite gradually.
Yeah.
But I would have no problem with going back on them tomorrow without... If I start to feel a bit low, I'd go back on them tomorrow because I would see it again as the signs of serotonin sort of deficiency. And I would say, in my experience, there was no sort of elation feeling from it. There was no sort of down feeling from it. There was no sort of... I could not tell you one physical effect that I would notice being on it. But what I could say, looking at it on the whole, was I suddenly became calm about things. Remarkably calm, you know, and I wouldn't have been. I would have been really quite distraught before, you know, but I was calm about it, and it sort of just put things into perspective. So I would encourage anyone that's, you know, concerned about the word antidepressant, don't call it antidepressant, call it just serotonin.
It's really interesting because from my perspective, when it comes to depression, depression.
Do you suffer with depression?
I've never suffered from depression, really? But during COVID, I went for a low time.
Yeah.
With my divorce.
Yeah.
And that's the only.
When did you get divorced?
I got divorced in, it was a year ago now.
Only a year.
A year ago, wow. But it took 3 years, and during that time, I'd never felt down, and I think it was more around it wasn't not going out, or it was just that I think it was the grief and the financial tie to my ex and the control that got me down. It's probably the lowest time. I wouldn't say it was depression. This is the way I look at it, right? Depression is repressed emotions. Okay. All emotions are valid. We look in this society and it's like, oh, we need to be happy. Fuck that bullshit.
Yeah.
Because life isn't about being happy. Definitely on mine, adult content.
Yeah.
But it isn't about that. The goal of life isn't be happy.
Yeah.
The goal of life is to live life fully.
Yeah.
Which is you experience the emotions. Now, we can numb the emotions.
Yeah.
Right? And it might make us feel okay for a time.
Yeah.
But it's also okay to go, do you know what? It's okay to feel fucking shit.
Yeah.
It's okay to lose a deal or to lose a husband or the person you thought they was and go through extreme grief. And you might feel low. That might not be depression. That's just fucking normal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, it's a normal feeling. Yeah. I mean, that's normalised as shit.
And just to add to that, because I think that's where, you know, I never ever took sertraline and, you know, but I thought it was about sort of numbing emotions. I didn't get any sense of ever numbing emotions on it. It wasn't that. It was just you didn't sweat the small bits, that's all. That you put things in perspective a little bit. That, I think it was just a natural sort of serotonin booster for me. Just my serotonin levels increased and, you know, I would look back on it and go, I'm really glad I did that then.
It's amazing that you followed your intuition and done what you needed in that moment.
My wife told me to go on them.
Did your wife tell you to go on them? Did she?
Yeah, she could see I was getting anxious and agitated.
It's so interesting because the way I look at it, as in, I'm a very big naturalist. I gave birth to my second at home with no medication.
Really? Brave.
And that was through hypnosis, right?
Right.
So that's why I'm passionate about helping
people.
Do
you remember
it? Hypnosis. 100%. So all hypnosis is self-hypnosis.
Yeah.
And it's just retraining your subconscious mind.
Yeah.
So my mum used to say to me, Marina, giving birth to you was one of the worst experiences of my life. I wanted to change that.
Right.
So I learned hypnobirthing to teach.
Yeah.
And I'd listen. It's almost like a meditation that you go into. And it was like, you know, this is going to be easy. You can do it. And at the end, I was like...
Was it easy?
It was easy. I mean, there's an element of, look, okay... It's a great metaphor for life, giving birth.
Yeah.
Because you feel a sensation in your body.
Mm.
But I didn't want the drugs. I was like, I'm meant to be feeling this in the moment. And it your brain switches you into a different drive just before you're going to push. Mm. So you need to make sure it's safe. So I think sometimes the more that you're in resistance to that, the more you're going to feel it in your body, right?
Yeah.
And your body's going to go, hang on, let's get you back into this moment. So you're going to feel this. So it's a gift. So it brings you, she brings you into this moment. So it's bringing me into this moment, right? And yeah, I mean, I felt it.
Yeah. It was weird because when we had our first child, we did all this Lamar's training.
Yeah.
You know, you ever heard of Lamar's training?
Is it like hypnobirthing?
To a certain degree.
Yeah.
Because I remember the sort of men have to participate in it. And we had this sort of 50-year-old woman would come round. I forget her name. It was we were living in Hertfordshire at the time. And she would say, look, you know, if the pain really gets bad, just start singing 10 Green Bottles.
Wow, so it's very different. I mean, like...
there was this one, I mean, I can say it because you said it's an adult theme. There was this one bit where she basically was talking about what was going to happen in birth. I think she was a midwife before, but a natural sort of childbirth midwife. And I remember she was in the living room and we were there and we're listening to every word and we're really getting into it with the whale music and everything. And I think she said, now, if you find that the baby starts to stall and, you know, nothing's really happening, what I recommend your husband does is a bit of clitoris stimulation. And I jumped up at that moment and I said, right, that's it. There is no way I'm wanking my wife off in the middle of the theatre with everyone looking around.
But isn't that interesting? And like, as you say this, I'm like, okay, A, what fucking good advice the midwife was giving.
I can't be doing that.
but listen, what we don't realise about birth, and this is coming into a different education, but hey, it's here, it's appeared. It's the same hormones to get the baby in as you need to get the baby out.
Yeah.
So there's a powerful video, and it was on YouTube, I'm not too sure if it's in it.
Yeah.
And they take a guy and they put him in a hospital.
Yeah.
And they say, and there's doctors coming in, they say, get a hard on. And this is what, you know, and they keep coming in the door and they can't do it. The guy can't do it.
Mm.
And it's to show a man that this is the same hormones as she needs to give birth. So you need melatonin. So you need it to be dark.
Yeah.
Right? You need vesperine, which is the touch hormone. So you need to be touched softly. Right. Right? You need all of it. You need oxytocin to be produced, which is that you only produce when you make love.
Yeah.
And when you give birth, when you breastfeed.
Yeah.
We don't know it. It's so primal.
Yeah.
And it's so we're the only mammal that goes away from the nest to give birth. Now, I believe follow your intuition, do what's right. You know, I've got a really good friend who, if she gave birth at home, she would have died because she had cancer, right? Yeah. So it's follow your intuition, but at the same time, it's like, it's just amazing this has been brought here in this conversation.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd be talking about this.
But it's like the metaphor. It's like, it's natural. And we move away from, like, there's shame in what's natural and, you know, sexual in a way, because we're talking about that. It's like that shame, but it's natural. It's like an innate, like a pain relief.
Yeah.
And make, you know, would you like pleasure? Would you like pain?
Yeah.
And we go towards the disconnect and the, okay, let's just rush you in and slice you open.
Yeah.
You're gonna feel that pain.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite controversial.
Yeah.
But you don't not feel the pain. You'll feel it for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's just going with your intuition, and it's such a big metaphor, and it's getting away from that shame.
Yeah.
Of our bodies.
Yeah.
And doing what's natural, because
I'm still not wanking my wife.
But you wouldn't do it at 30, you might do it at home.
Yeah.
Or she might, you know, and it's kind of that privacy. But it's that privacy and the unobserved, and it's an intimate act to make love.
Yeah.
And an intimate act to give birth.
Yeah, not
really. And even to die. But it isn't. And it's just like we've taken the intimacy into me, you see.
Yeah.
And in them situations, if we don't have, you know, that, you know, dark, unobserved and feel safe, our body slows down. We produce adrenaline.
Yeah.
That's why it's slowing down. We feel scared. We don't feel like we're protected. And then you're in birth for hours and hours and hours and get cut open.
Right.
And it's just, that whole, and it's different for a man, because a man and a woman are very different, right? Mm. So a man wants to feel like he's doing something, right? I've taken you to the hospital. But it's an element of that letting go and that being. Yeah. And being. I literally gave birth at home. One of the best experiences. I felt that my own baby's head come out.
Yeah.
Like,
you
I
had
remember,
a midwife, clearly.
Well, she came last minute and she goes, I knew you'd be like this. Because I was like, I can't walk up the stairs now.
And
she's like, I can't even walk up the stairs. But I remember, I never forget, in that moment, I was going, I'm not sure, because this doesn't even feel like birth. Like, this is, you know, I was so in the, I visualised more than hypnobirthed. Every night, I was like, I'm going to have Azaria at 7 in the morning. And I felt it, and I visualised it, and I'd done a mental rehearsal of it.
Yeah.
Because I never had no help with childcare, I needed it to be 7 in the morning. It was 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
Right? And it was so powerful, and I'd already done it. But I just remember in that moment of thinking, I don't know if I can do this. And she was like, just feel your own baby's head.
Yeah.
And it wasn't being done to me. Birth wasn't done to me. It wasn't me thinking that I needed somebody else to tell me about my body. Mm. No, I know my body.
Yeah.
I was more in tune. I wasn't embarrassed or ashamed. This is mine. Like, why would I want someone to get the forceps up me and to cut me? And like, why is that okay? And we're, you know, that's fine. Why are we talking to be ashamed to actually tune into our bodies and ourselves and to do these things ourselves in birth? But it's in life. And Roger, sorry to go off on one, because we're thinking, oh my God, but it's...
I didn't expect to talk about
it. But it's a metaphor for life. It's like trusting you and that intimacy and that connection and like going towards it instead of away from it.
Yeah. I've never had a baby.
But you have, because you were there, right? Yeah. And it's almost like stepping into that intimacy, which is with every, you know, with your, and having no shame in going deeper.
Mm.
Because... You know, this is so my thing of what I'm talking about, right? Mm. And we've talked about it. You know, we were talking about the disconnect and the way that people are just in the swipe society right now, and they're flicking through, and the way you've seen this.
Yeah.
And that's because people can't go deep within. There's nothing wrong with technology.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with social media can be used for benefit or negative. It's here. Let's give it the program.
Yeah.
It's here, right? Mm. But how can we use it positively and go, okay, what people really need is more connection and to go deeper. And you're in that journey of like, you're like, Marina, I'm going deeper.
Yeah.
And how admirable, because you're going to champion lots of men to go deeper.
Well,
am I making you feel uncomfortable?
No. I just want you to know that the 10 green bottles didn't work.
I don't think they did.
That was in the first 10 minutes. And I think it went on for 20 hours of childbirth, and she ended up having a cesarean.
There's an element of making love, right? Is stepping into that making love.
It didn't feel like that when they were ripping open her stomach and the blood was...
What trauma?
Anyway, I got banned from...
What trauma?
Yeah, I got banned from the is it NCT class? Natural Childbirth Trust. I got banned from it. I went to it. Have you ever been to an NCT class?
I went to something similar.
I'm trying to.
I remember just was like falling asleep in it.
Okay.
So don't blame you.
Well, I went to it. I got dragged along because obviously I was living in Brighton, and of course we got like an NCT class, and I mean, I knew I was in trouble because I think at one stage they said, look, I'd like all the men to sort of get on all fours, and I just want to imagine that you're giving birth. And you're blowing the air out of your buttocks. And my wife can just see me just like chuckling on the floor. I've got my arse in the air and I'm meant to be blowing air out of it.
Why did you get burned?
I didn't get burned. What did
you mean? Banned.
You
said you got banned.
Oh, I got banned. No.
Not burned.
Yeah,
like
no, not for
that.
I was chuckling then, and she was sort of kicking me. And she knew I was in a mischievous mood. And they then went, and we've got Mr. and Mrs. Wade here. And... this is their going to be their second child. Would you like to tell us all about your first child? Well, they never really asked me before what was the first child birth was like. So I just went, wow, it was terrible. I just thought they wanted to hear it. So I didn't realise that a lot of people in the room were giving birth for the first time. So I went on about this happened and that happened. And then we got brought into the theatre, and then you know, forget the baby. I was worried that, you know, Jen wasn't going to even live. The blood was everywhere.
Oh, you poor thing. But you know what?
Those poor things.
No, but not only that, Roger, what you're talking about here, though, is that was traumatising for you. And you
I thought she was going to die.
But you had no safe pace. Again, like, you know, again, I've got a real passionate thing for men being supported.
Mm.
But where was there a place for you to go and go, do you know what?
I've gone through this trauma. I really don't.
I don't think men should be.
No, not.
If men don't want to be there, they don't have to be.
Not in an emergency cesarean when literally there is like, it's like volcano. There's just blood, you know, coming out of my wife's body. I'm hearing her stomach muscles get ripped apart. And she's going into a very deep adrenaline shock. And I'm just thinking to myself, she's not going to make it, you know. This is really bad. And you're right, I don't think I should have been there. But
it's
swiftly on.
Yeah, we can move on. But it's just, you know, that again, like helping guys with that trauma.
Yeah, don't go in there.
And so, but it's almost like...
Don't look south.
Well, maybe you should have done the first one. First midwife said for you to do. Which one would you have chose if you could have picked, hey? If you could go back in time, let's go with the first, choice. Really?
Yeah. Okay, everyone, stop. I'm just going to wank my wife off. That would do the trick.
Wank.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, but yeah. Hey. But it's almost like, yeah, what would you choose if you could, you know, choose the two? It's interesting.
Yeah. Well.
But it's trauma.
Can I have neither? Is that allowed?
Can I just please get out of the room?
Yeah,
it's this pressure to put a man in a room when you give birth. But back in the days, it was all women.
Mm.
So I think, again, if a man doesn't want to be there and it's going to affect him and he's not there emotionally or whatever the reason is, then that's okay. Let's stop pressurising people to do things they don't want to do.
The second time round, my wife gave birth naturally and that was really fulfilling, and that was a good process. The first time round was terrible, really terrible. Nothing good about it whatsoever. I've felt I was in the room of a major surgery. It was like a war zone.
Do you think you suffered from that? Do you remember like feeling like it was a difficult time in your life?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I had much more difficult times than that.
Okay.
So I was going to go, let's go back now.
Yes, come on.
No, because we spoke a lot about that journey and, you know, who am I? And I was just going to close a few loops there because I think it's important to the listeners.
Yeah,
you
of know, course.
So we close those loops.
Yeah, like, I love it.
That we opened up.
Yes, please
and
do.
And so in my first business, I think because of my deep-rooted insecurities, I ran that business for my ego. Suddenly I was really good at doing something. And then my last business, I ran really with a more pure business idea, which was, look, I'm in business to make money. And what I would say to anyone listening as an entrepreneur, never be ashamed of making money. You know, it's how what you do with your money or what you do with your time is a result of that matters. Take a look at Warren Buffett. Take a look at Bill Gates, who are both given 95% of their wealth away to charity. So there's nothing wrong with making money. It's just the way you what you do with it. And then I think what's really important to people is to really understand why they're in business. If you are in business for your ego, it might not be the best place to be for you. It certainly won't be a great place for your employees, you know. So I would suggest that you get, you know, really good counselling or coaching to understand that and try to make you know, you've got to lose your ego in business to be good, because you've got to be able to admit when you're wrong, and you've got to guide people and take them along with you, you know. So it's you've got to be wary of the ego.
Love it, because what can I summarise?
Go on.
You're talking about separation, and then you're talking about togetherness.
Yeah.
And when you were saying ego, and then, you know, for me, it's you're saying self, and then dropping into heart and oneness, right? Yeah. And as you're saying it, but I don't want to make it wrong. like, I don't want to make any parts of you and your journey wrong. I don't even want to make the ego-driven part, because it isn't. It's almost like that's been part of your journey and who you are. And that's, you know, different stages of awareness that people might go through. And it's having that love and compassion for even someone that's in that, right? Because it comes from a place, as we both know, of wounding. It comes from a place of, you know, wanting to prove more self-worth. And it comes from a place of not self-love. And I'm all about the heart and love, right? So we need to love that part of us. And anyone else that's doing that, and look at them with love and compassion, because they are valued. They are loved. They are worthy just for them being them. Not having to do all these things to do. For them just being the person that they are. So I don't want to make your journey wrong. Like, even that first part.
But you,
it made you who you are.
To, you also have to learn from your journey. And what I learned was, I in my later years, I sort of really understood that that was a big driving force in me. That sort of deep down insecurities of perhaps losing my dad and, you know, maybe being bullied a bit at school and maybe not being as successful as I could have been from a educational or sporting perspective. You know, it drove me on to being successful at in my businesses, and I had a real drive there. Now I'm a lot more philosophical about it, and you know, I've certainly I would never want to be a CEO of another company. I just feel that would take too much out of me. But so now I want to start helping other entrepreneurs, and that sort of brings me to my last bit, which my last bit of purpose, which is, you know, I am going to now sort of invest in some young entrepreneurs. Doesn't have to be young, by the way, entrepreneurs, in terms of their the people and the ideas, because I fundamentally believe it's people and ideas first, and then it's business next. They create a business, and you've got to understand the people and ideas behind that. And I think a lot of private equity traditional companies are just more concerned with business concepts and perceived risk and spreadsheets and trying to effectively theorize business. But I don't think you can theorize business. As I said before, I think you've got to really understand the emotional side of business, and you've got to be really in tune with that, and you've got to understand the emotions of the customer. And I've always had one really strong mantra when it came to the customer, and it sort of reinforces, I guess, Maslow's sort of hierarchy of human needs, and that is the need to feel special. Everyone wants to feel special. And that's why people wear designer clothes. And that's why people go on fancy holidays or buy nice cars. It's a status symbol. They want to feel special. And, you know, when we're running events at Box Park or food or drink at Box Park, the things that make us special is the food that we've got, the drink we've got, the ambience that we've got, and the events that we put on, you know. And that's, we want people to go away feeling really special, and that's what's really driven me throughout a lot of my entrepreneurial career. It's been in touch with the emotional needs of the customer. No customer turns up and he buys something and they get out a spreadsheet, on certainly not the ones that I know. They just do it on feeling. So you've got to be in tune with your heart. There you go.
I love that. It's so true. Like, every word you say, it's like, you know, making that customer feel the most important person in the world, but also your employees, but also not just doing it because it's a strategy, but doing it because you're doing it from the heart. Because you love, you know, that person who's sitting, you know, you're honouring that. So often we're looking for the next thing, or we're thinking, but when we're actually just dropping into the moment, into the now, that's all we have, and we're honouring, like me and you, honouring this time, honouring this space, with love, and making that person. And it's not even, you know, I think when you go into like making that, it's just genuinely just being that, right? Being that love, sharing that. And honouring that time and that connection and giving that back is just beautiful.
Yeah, it's not just about, I mean, I wish, in many ways, I wish, you know, maybe going back into that child, I wish that maybe I had my dad around me in later times, and I wish I had certainly had the influence of my granddad, because I think what they would have told me is that money isn't everything, and you spend your whole life chasing money, and then you get the money and you go, is that it? Because, you know, I had everything I wanted before I made the money, really, and I don't want to have the flash, you know, the private jet and the private and a big yacht. My mates have all got that, but they've also got massive divorces. So I just want to, you know, I want to find a new purpose that makes me feel rich inside, not necessarily, you know, rich in a bank balance, but just makes me feel rich. I think somebody once said the richest person in the room is not the person that needs the most, it's the person that needs the least. And that's the person I want to be.
I think it's very beautiful, and I think you're a great example to many entrepreneurs. But it's that element of do what you're going to do from your heart, lead from your heart, connect to that, know who you are, live a life of purpose and passion, give. Life is about what you give, not what you get. And that's inner peace. And you're talking about being surrounded by people that have achieved what looks like success, but they're not in peace. They're not in harmony. They haven't got great relationships. And, you know, it's being in the heart that you've dropped into now. And I'm super excited and honoured to be part of this journey and to share this space with you. Thank you so much for being courageous.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting us.
No, for being vulnerable. I wasn't sure
what we were going to talk about.
Well, this is it. And I
definitely never thought about talking about my wife's first childbirth experience.
Well, this just goes to show, because I didn't research you, Roger. I just know that you're a phenomenal person. You're out there. You're very courageous. You're authentic. You're you. And you're putting that across in everything you do. And you just intrigued me. But I want to encourage people to drop into the moment and just really connect. Mm. And you can't plan that.
No, I agree.
In all relationships. Yeah. Because that's when you're really in love.
Mm.